Okay, the DL Debate coming to you live after 7 o'clock this evening. Its presenter is Brendan Devenny, and he joins us on the programme now. Brendan, how are you getting on?
Doing great, yourself?
Good, good to have you with us. Donegal ladies losing out to neighbours Tyrone yesterday. Any concerns with the direction of traffic with that team?
No. Listen, as we've spoken before, Greg, Germanaldi's building a new side there, you know, talking about potential. You know, goal for promotion. It wasn't a lot in the game, 1-12-3-11. I mean, the goals did the damage in it. You know, it was close enough encounter. But I think for him, you know, happy enough to do well in the league, build towards the championship, and just get a bit of experience for a lot of these girls, as I say, because there's a, you know, there's been a host of changes there and that. So I don't think he'd be overly bothered about that. He just wants to build for championship.
Interesting chat with you and Jim McGuinness after Donegal's victory yesterday. Perhaps a little tougher than some were expecting. I think Donegal were 1-8 on for those people that were going to bet on it. Effectively, don't back them. But for much of that game, it was a much closer contest than the odds would suggest it was going to be.
Yeah, I suppose Mickey Hart and Devlin had done a good job there. Like, Louth were an up and up, and then they jumped ship and went to Derry. So there was a makings of a decent side there. You know, Jerry Brennan came in, you know, very much, you know, a highly sought after new coach. And they were set up very defensive, you know, real, real counter-attack blanket, physically very strong. So we did find it difficult against them. It was a kind of sticky kind of match. And Louth league position, as I say to Jim, you know, Armagh only beat them by a point. They lost by 2 to Meath in a game they probably should have won. And Cavan beat them by a point also. So they were two teams that you know, we had tough battles with. So in many ways, I suppose by the end of the game, maybe the scoreline flattered us a bit. The goal was the crucial one. And just when I came home last night, I was thinking, like, you know, just about the small things. I mean, the two subs combined for the goal, and Hugh McFadden, who was just back from the previous week from injury, his strength inside was the difference. It was a high ball in. He used his strength, held off the man, got it across to Jack McKelvey back in the net. And that game, that goal, kind of, without that game, the game was in the melting pot at that point. You know, there was a point in it, so that kind of gave us a boost. We went up to 6 and kind of controlled the game. But just those small, small margins can be the difference when having someone with huge strength to come on there and make that opportunity.
Yeah, it's a squad game. I mean, you want to bring people on that are going to make an impact, don't you? It's not just about giving people a run out.
Yeah, and we've whole, like I was saying to Jim, there's 6 or 7 players, Greg, still to come back, and you could make a case for all of them have potentially starting in the team. So hopefully we get a lot of these injuries back, because as you said, even if they don't start, if you have lads that are very, very close, they can come on and really create something. Because the games, you've seen it yesterday, every game, it opens up towards the end. You know, we often a lot of these games are very, very tight, particularly first half, but they always do open up. And then if you have players of pace and ability to come on, that's a big thing. All the modern teams have it. Like all the big sides have it, the squad, the depth, and that's very important.
Derry Dublin was a hard watch.
Yeah. You know what, this was probably Derry's first big challenge. You could say again the previous games that they played there, you know, Tyrone were out of sorts, missing people. Kerry had only half the team from All Ireland on, and you know, the games they won there, you could maybe question. Galway were missing maybe 3-4 of their best players. So this was the first real challenge, and you know, the Dublin kind of showed up that this blanket defence can be opened up. They're the masters at it, and in many ways, I think it was a big game for Mickey Hart probably to reset. Derry had won all the other games pretty easy, and people were talking them up as going to win every game this season kind of thing. So I think even though you want to, Mickey Hart wants to win the league and beat everybody in it, I think in many ways you learn from certain games. And last year, Derry, Dublin came down, Derry beat them at Celtic Park, but Dublin did beat them quite easily in the league Division 2 final. But this time again, Dublin just seem to have upped it the last couple of weeks. Greg and Gian, they are the side to beat.
Yeah, and Donegal the side to beat in Ulster now.
Don't know. We would still want the Celtic Park as underdogs, Greg. There's no doubt in that. You know, if you look at last year, I suppose we kept with Derry for 45 minutes at home in the championship, and that was with all the troubles of last year. So I think there'll probably be maybe 10, 11 extra players involved this year that weren't there last year. Now, we are away from home, and they are back-to-back Ulster champions. They are, you know, up. They're probably, people put them probably number three in Ireland at the minute. So it's still difficult. I would still say we're outsiders for that one now, Greg, and we'll keep talking up the Derrymen in between.
Yeah, well, you're the biggest Derry cheerleader there's been for the last 2 years, so for whatever your motivation is. Just a quick one on that. Has the Derry people welcomed Mickey Hart into their hearts?
Yeah, there's some deep football areas in Derry there.
Just seems strange seeing him with the Derry cap on.
Yeah, funny, that game we played him in the McKenna Cup final, I remember going across the pitch and he was walking across and I just said hello to him, and it was so strange to see him with the Derry gear on, right? Because, you know, like such 18 years plus with the throne between all teams and a very, very strange appointment, Greg. But listen, he just looks like he's in to do a job and that's it. So yeah. A few people were coming over shaking his hands and welcoming him and all that. And I guess for him, Greg, it's because GA's kind of rooted in who you are and where you're from. To him, it just looks like, listen, this is professional. I'm doing a job here and that's it. But it's not like soccer. These things don't happen that often. But that's certainly one that has changed up the management game a bit, all right. Can't see that happening too often.
No. And funny, like some of the Abbey Vocational School players, Skullmora, Buncrana players, might go on to win Ulsters, who's to say All-Ireland, but their highest sport and memory or the best sport and memory could be formed for them in the next couple of weeks, because the Abbey VS and Skullmora, they're going in search of All-Ireland glory, and a big day for both parishes.
Yeah, listen, All-Ireland finals, Greg, don't come along too often. You think of all the games and you have to come through and all the preparation and work that's done to get to a final. So massive for both schools. You know, it's as you said, the thing about that, you only get one crack at it quite often, you know, depending on what year you're in or how your school goes. So it's one of those one-off days that you'll never get probably a chance to repeat. So massive day for both schools. Say Kevin Campbell from Skullmora, Satanta, player manager, he's their manager, he's coming on involved, and I spoke to Kieran Thompson yesterday, he's down at Skullmora as well. He picked up an Ulster All-Star on behalf of Niamh Connell, club All-Star at the weekend too, so he's up in the site as well. So huge day for both schools.
All right, brilliant stuff. You can join Brendan live after 7. Park Hill for Tees back in studio alongside Brendan. Irish Times columnist Gordon Manning amongst the guests. So it's a show not to be missed live just after 7. You can listen to the DL Debate or indeed watch the DL Debate on our socials in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. As always, a pleasure to chat to you and we'll see you soon. Thanks, Brent. Take care of yourself. And by the way, just in relation to all the weekend sporting action, be it the ladies or the men's or the athletics or whatever it might be, and perhaps we don't talk about this enough, there's a fantastic sports section of our website, highlandradio.com, where you can, at your leisure, because not everyone can listen to the Sunday Sports Show or whatever, though many of you do, you can listen to reaction. What's Jim McGuinness's take on the performance? Obviously, with Brendan or any of the team, you know, you get a real insight into what's going on there. I mentioned the ladies, the game, the report from the game and some reaction to just as the game is concluded. That's all on our website, fully interactive for you to listen and read whatever way you want to consume it. So go to the website, go to the sports section every Monday or whenever you want to. And as I say, you'll not see coverage of Donegal sport like it in terms of the audio, the visual, the text and what have you. And we're joined on the programme now, I'm really pleased to say, by Cathy Kelly, who is, of course, one of our best authors and author of her latest book, Sisterhood. Cathy, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, Greg, it's a pleasure. You know, I'm just thinking, my sister-in-law is a Hughes because her husband is a Hughes. He's a great name.
It is.
Not obviously as fabulous as Kelly, you know.
Of course. How are you, Cathy?
Do you know what? I'm doing okay, Greg. I'm doing okay. As you can see, and not the listeners can't see, but I have the very short hair of the regrowth cancer person. But I've a dyed blonde. I'm working on the
It looks fantastic, actually, if you don't mind me saying so.
And it's getting all fluffy. Everyone wants to pet it. I'm like sort of a fluffy tennis
ball. Now you know how I feel. Everyone always wants to pet me.
But it's really weird. Do you know what? Because bald, I mean, is beautiful when men do it. Now, when I was totally bald, I think I looked like Did you ever see that film, Galaxy Quest, that had Tim Robbins? There was little aliens in it that were that looked really sweet, and then they bared their teeth and they were scary. I felt I looked like one of them. So it wasn't a good look on me, but the bald, you do it.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind. I want to talk, of course, about your book. That's why we've invited you on. But also, after the book, you started talking about your breast cancer diagnoses, telling your fans about that. And I think there's always a bit of you, obviously, in anything you write. Okay, I just want to frame like how it felt talking about yourself and your personal experience, sort of like out in the open. Whereas I suppose if we read some of your books, we'd have picked up an awful lot about you. But you were having to talk about yourself. Was that comfortable for you? Was it more difficult than one might imagine?
Do you know, it was quite weird, Greg. When I was diagnosed, I sort of, you know, went to ground and I'm going, okay, we have to cope with this. And I did my, you know, I'm the big mommy person. I have to mind all the people in my circle. A very female thing to do. But, and then when I was having chemo, I was very, very sick. I have a cancer where you have chemo, surgery, and then radiotherapy. Mm-hmm. So I'm at the waiting to get radiotherapy stage of my voyage. I'm trying not to call it journey.
I know. I understand exactly why. Yeah.
But the talking about it, do you know what? When I was diagnosed, I really wanted to know more about what it was like. And that's going to sound daft because there's so much written about cancer, and there's so. But at the same point, talking to people who'd gone through chemo or cancer became very important to me. Mm-hmm. So I lapped up every article I read. I mean, you know, October is, we'll say, Cancer Awareness Month. Oh my God, I was reading everything.
Yeah.
And as someone who, you know, I'm into the concept of public service very much so. I mean, I work with UNICEF. It's very important to me to help, in the sense that if I have a voice, I can help people with that voice. So I realized that it would be lovely if I had been just diagnosed with breast cancer and someone like me was coming on talking about it really honestly. So it felt like I was reaching out to people in a really nice way. And I know, I suppose the issue when you have something very personal that you're sharing, you can get a bit of negativity on social media. And I just kept off social media.
Yes, good call.
Because you know, it's just too depressing. But you know, the people who've got onto me talking about their cancers, talking about listening to me speak, it's been very powerful. So it was weird. Let's put it this way. 27 years ago when I had my first book published, I wouldn't have been able to talk this openly. Mm. But now as I'm getting on in years, I'm much more comfortable talking about stuff because I'm like going, okay, if the haters don't like that, that's fine. But it's really helpful to people with cancer to have someone else going, you know, this was terrifying and this was awful and this helped and this didn't help.
Yeah, you know. And the more voices, because it's very individual to people, and some person's experience is completely alien to them. So the more people are talking about it in different ways, it's always going to resonate, or someone needs to hear it. That's when we talk about stuff on this show.
Yes,
I do it because if the one person that needs to hear it hears it, then I think the day's work's done.
That's exactly it. If one person hears it, that is so incredibly powerful. And, you know, when I was going to have chemo, I was desperate to find people who'd had chemo to know what that was like. Mm-hmm. Because you go on the internet and it says lots of things about chemo, but there's not, you know, you've got to really dig deep. And then when you're having chemo, you're going, is this normal? Am I normal? So it's lovely to have other people say, yeah, that was dreadful. That bit was difficult. Yeah. And then when they took that drug out, it was easier. And you feel more empowered by, you know, your when you know more. Knowledge is power.
It really is, indeed. Now, on to the book, because talk about, you know, juggling act. Of course, you've completed this book. You're talking about this book. You're talking about your own situation. But this, I think all good music, film, books, it kind of, you know, I think it works best when you can sort of, you recognize yourself in it, or you recognize something in it that feels real, okay? And it's each person might feel it in a different way, but I think that's when you know you've really hit the jackpot, that's how people are consuming it. So, and tell us the story of Sisterhood. Not all of the story, the headlines, obviously.
Sisterhood, it's really, it's sort of sisterhood on two levels, because it's about two sisters, but it's also about women and female friendships, which, you know, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for that. So it's about two sisters, and one of them is coming up to her 50th birthday, Louise, Lou. And she is one of those beautiful people who does everything for everyone else and never takes time out for herself. And, you know, she cleans her mother's house and she runs around after everyone. And she allows people to treat her like this. I think that's one of the not one of the messages, but one of the themes running through the book is that, you know, people will treat you the way you allow them to treat you. So she's no boundaries. And it's coming up to her 50th birthday and her mom is a bit of a nightmare. The mom is a bit of a man killer and is, you know, she's a sculptor and she's, you know, she's full of energy, but you know, not energy to actually clean her own house. And it's coming up to Lou's 50th birthday. And suddenly everything starts to fall apart. Meanwhile, her sister, Tony, who's younger, is a much tougher cookie. And she, one of her, she's also a broadcaster, actually. I like writing about broadcasting. But she also mentors women in business to help them with, we'll say, you know, break glass ceilings and, you know, get treated. I'm always very bad at explaining this particular bit, but, you know, to level out the playing field, because as we know, women, in, you know, are not paid as much as men in many industries. So she's saying to women, OK, how do we get there? And we first see her on a radio station where she's talking to a guy who runs a company who's going on about, you know, how important women in business are and why we don't really need her organization, which helps women in business. And she says, well, how many women in managerial positions do you have? And the guy sort of is on the back foot, is going, well, we did have one, but, you know, she left. It didn't work out. So suddenly she does humiliate him, really, because he's gone on air full of this blarney and it's all untrue and he's quite out to get her. So, and something else is happening in her personal life. So it all comes down to Lou's 50th birthday party and their mom gets some bad news and she's been drinking neat gin or vodka. I forget which. But anyway, it all goes horribly wrong. A big secret comes out and the two sisters go off on a road trip to sort of find themselves and to find out the truth of this story.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Okay, so it gives you such, I mean, obviously people have a journey to go on as well, but gives you so much latitude for them to explore themselves and each other and what have you.
And get to go to lovely, beautiful countries. They go to Sicily, actually. That's where they go. But it's,
lovely. I mean, the reviews have been wonderful. There's one I'm kind of interested in from Marion Keyes. I really, really loved it. I think it's her best book so far. So, like, that's nice, but that's like saying I prefer your eldest child, the rest of them. You know? Like, I think it's so well intended, but it's like, I go, Marion, but I thought the second one was, I don't know.
I suppose I know exactly what you're saying. So, years and years ago, somebody in PR in the UK wanted me to write an article about which one of my children I preferred best. Yes. Better. I'm not making that up. So, yeah. You know, it's a scary
it's
world.
It's lovely and it's beautifully intended. I just thought it was, particularly when, you know.
I know. I think it's, you're always trying to go better with each book. So when someone says that, you're like, that's so much. That's
yeah,
so lovely.
I know,
and,
of course.
Because
you're always evolving and developing, aren't you? I mean, you know, as you go on your own life journey, that J word's getting overused nowadays, but you know, you'll bring in more of your experience and understanding and different perspectives into your work as well.
I know, you get older and wiser, and I mean, I'm 57 now, and I started writing when I was, oh God, 27, is that right? That must be right. Yeah, so, God, that's staggering, Greg. I can't get over that. That makes me feel like 100. And I inside, I'm still like a sort of a slightly ditzy 24-year-old.
Yeah, I'm 24 as well in my head.
I know.
I'm 24, Yeah,
we stay 24. But you know, it's really good when you stay 24 in your head. I was reading an article only this morning about long life. And a lot of it is enthusiasm for life. And there was other stuff. And I feel that, you know, not eating sugar was partly on the list. But I'm just going to ignore that bit. And I'm going to work towards keeping enthusiasm in my life. But yes, as you get older, you bring so much more into books. And, you know, so now I have loads of information in this head. I just have to, if I could plug something in, you know, at night when I'm thinking in bed and get it down on the computer, that'd be brilliant.
I know. It's funny, the top line in the back of the book, it's just when you talked about your cancer and what have you as well. Lou never puts herself first. And it in the numerous conversations I've had, primarily with women with cancer, and you mentioned it a little earlier on, whereby you go to tell people that you care about, but you become, it's actually you telling them, but it's going to be okay. I'm going to get through this. Don't need to worry. So you actually become the counsellor of everyone that you're breaking the news to, rather than, and this is just, it's just a human condition, rather than all of a sudden you tell everyone, it's right, right, everyone, let's get around Kathy. They are there, don't get me wrong, but it's so often, like Lou, that you, what can be in your darkest moment, you turn to the making sure everyone knows Kathy's going to be okay. Don't worry about
I was very much like that. Actually, do you know what I was doing while I was waiting for you? I started to read this book this lovely lady sent to me, which is When Things Went I'm going to say the word tits up. And
That's the second time today that phrase has been used. Not by you. God. No, it's quite funny. It's fine. But it's two people have said it today, but go ahead.
Oh, it's actually hilarious. But this is a wonderful book, and it's written for charity. It's for Purple House Cancer Support, which is quite near me, and Marie Keating Foundation. But it's lots of poems. This marvellous woman, Dervla O'Hare, and I have to actually try and get in touch with her because she sent it to me. And it's a beautiful book. And she talks about telling her mom. It's through poetry, and she's a poem about trying to tell her mom and trying to take away the pain. And that's exactly it. So when I was diagnosed, which was the end of July, first I came out and I said it to my partner, PJ, because I was, you know, what they were basically saying to me in breast check, and women check your breasts, as we all know. But what they were, you know, they couldn't absolutely say I had breast cancer, because only a biopsy can say that. But from they had taken samples, and from the I'm losing all my words, chemo brain is real, from the ultrasound, that was it. The doctor, she said, look, you're coming back, you know, this is we can see this is not good. So I knew I had cancer, so I had to go out and tell my partner. Then I was thinking, okay, right, I have to tell, you know, my children, and that's so hard, and telling my mom and my brother and my sister, because I knew they'd all be in bits. So I was like, it was going to be fine, nothing to see here, you know, it's all good. It's an interesting thing, but it's also a lovely thing. It comes from a place of huge love and trying to protect the people you love.
Women are incredibly special. There's no doubt about it, because it is. I mean, we have to do it to some extent as well, but it's just a very, very common story. Okay, listen, Kathy, it's been lovely speaking to you, and I'm so pleased that things on your career path, not career path, your career path as well, of course, but your health path, trying to avoid the J word again, seems to be going really well for you. And you're rocking the blonde.
Oh, it's great. Getting sort of fluffy, I have to say.
You're very lucky, because you've got a very nicely shaped head, you see.
Thank you. Okay. This is so exciting. I don't think I'll ever let it grow long again, because I think I was hiding behind my hair.
Why would you?
I had the long blonde hair. I think I hid behind the Greg, so no more hiding.
Right. I'll see you probably next year with hair halfway down your back now. It's probably fleeting.
I know you won't, Greg. You're an angel. Thank you so much.
Sisterhood from Kathy Kelly is out there now, and it's been incredibly well received by, you know, people that know what they're talking about. Kathy, it's lovely.
Number one in Ireland.
Excellent. Fair play to you for screaming that from the rooftops as well. Well done, Kathy. God bless you. Thank you so very much indeed. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you so
much. Bye-bye. Kathy Kelly, author there of Sisterhood. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. Just for those of you watching, that is the front of the book. A beautiful, tender story of family, lies, secrets, and the power of sisterhood. A perfect book to escape with, says Sinead Moriarty. Full of heart and wisdom. This is Kathy Kelly at her absolute best. That's a Freudian slip there. At absolute best. Unputdownable. That comes in from Patricia Scanlon. And Kathy, wonderfully speaking so openly about her, and how I inadvertently said the word breast there, because I was thinking of her as she goes through her continuing her treatment towards the end, and she's rung the bell in her battle with breast cancer, which is good, but still there's the radiotherapy to come, as many of you out there would understand as well. On this week's Monday Focus, we look at the 10th anniversary of the launch of the Wild Atlantic Way. It's a decade old, can you believe, which heralded a new era for Irish tourism. We discuss its birth, success and plans for the years ahead. Joan Crawford's manager of Wild Atlantic Way at Fulcher Ireland and has joined us in studio. Good morning to you, Joan.
Good morning, Greg.
Hard to believe it's been 10 years. I remember the discussion about this in advance, and there were parts that were included and then they were included. And it's only really with the passing of time that I fully get, you know, what it is and how bloody successful it's been.
Yeah, I suppose the Wild Atlantic Way was created at a time when we were in global recession, Greg. And the west coast of Ireland, tourism was decimated. Like, people were leaving the west coast in their droves, and tourism businesses were only really open about 8 weeks in the year. So we had to do something that was going to be significant. And we knew we had the people, the hospitality, the product, and, you know, amazing scenery. And that's where the concept of the Wild Atlantic Way came around, that brand proposition. So it's the longest defined coastal touring route in the world, and it's at 2,500 kilometres. And, like, from concept probably to reality, it took in the region of 2 years. But it was probably one of those things that every government agency got behind, including the public and the private sector. And, like, local authorities, I suppose, gave us the most support in terms of they gave us their engineers to get the infrastructure up on the route. Like, there's 3,850 signs along that route. So it was a mammoth task. And we've 187 discovery points.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of infrastructure requirements there. And I suppose while we were doing all of that, Tourism Ireland was out selling the brand concept overseas. And we were getting really positive feedback, especially from those markets, France, Germany, the US and the UK. It resonated really well. They were really warm to the concept. Mm-hmm. So it just took off from there.
Yeah, and the raw product was there too, Steve, yeah, so that helps.
Definitely.
So I defy anyone to come to any part of the Wild Atlantic Way, but obviously I'm going to favour it up here,
yeah,
and not go, oh my God, this is amazing. But I think it also appealed to people like me that I do need to be spoon fed a little bit. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If I go to an area, I'll, you know, go to a local tourism shop or something. You pick up a few leaflets and it's like, oh, you know, what's going on? And then end up just going to the pub. Not literally, right? But metaphorically speaking. So I think for people like me as well, it's something that's defined, isn't it? And even completing it becomes, I did the Wild Atlantic Way, or I'm going to do it over a number of years. Like, it really works in terms of return business, marketing. It's easy to market. Well, I would say that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it really helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really has. And that fact that we had the discovery points was pushing people along the route. And yes, we had the Wild Atlantic Way passport and people were following it. And what we really want to do, though, is we don't want people, you know, on a mission to do the full route in one go. We want them to come back, and generations of the next family coming back to do the Wild Atlantic Way. But probably, Greg, I'm in tourism 23 years. I was there at the initial inception of Wild Atlantic Way. And the one thing we have seen is we've seen small towns and villages really come back to life with the tourism product. You can see the season extension. We're starting to see the season start earlier in the year. They're getting towards the back end of the year now. We want to get that 12-month business. So we might be 10 years, but we've another 10 years of really hard work ahead in terms of, you know, that investment for big visitor attractions. It's going to pull the visitor north.
And the weather isn't a disadvantage. Like, I'll always remember seeing, you know, a busload of German tourists getting off a bus in Donegal Town in their coats, and they had their, you know, their, what do you call those jackets? You know, the waterproof jackets, right? And us walking through the town in T-shirts, freezing with the rain hopping off our heads. You know what I mean? They prepared for the weather, and we're just, so that's not really a great disadvantage. We get great weather, but I don't think tourists generally mind from outside the country in particular. And in terms of growth as well, as you say, this started probably at a great time when we were at our lowest ebb financially. 2024 is looking like beating 2023 as well. Like, so it continues to grow in popularity.
And this year we'll mark the 10th anniversary in Killarney at Mehill. And Mehill is where we bring in 250 overseas buyers. And we put our trade in front of them to be able to give them the opportunity to sell their product. So that's where it all began. And we're going back to that now for the 10th anniversary. We'll also launch new brand assets that'll give industry the opportunity to be able to market the things there is to see and do along the way, those little hidden gems. But also there'll be a very strong focus on north of Galway in terms of bringing in those media and press trips that we're working in conjunction with Tourism Ireland on.
What I liked as well, and I can say this, but you have to be careful because you, we still have, you know, there's still a challenge in visitors getting into Dublin, whatever, and us getting them to the West Coast, right? But I think what has been interesting to see is the Midlands and the East Coast going, hold on a second, this Wild Atlantic Way thing is kind of, it's doing really quite well. We want a piece of that action.
Yeah, there's that. We have the new Hidden Heartlands brand and we have the IAE brand, but Wild Atlantic Grey is still marching ahead. And it's interesting you say that about getting people from Dublin. We know Wild Atlantic Grey is still a tale of two halves. In South Wild Atlantic Way, it's all about dispersion of the visitor to get them out from those honeypots, whereas north of Wild Atlantic Way, we need to get those international visitors who are going to spend a little bit more and stay a little bit longer.
And now more people to fly directly into the West, into Ireland West Airport. Yeah. We often view, I think, Ireland West Airport as a destination, sorry, as a place to go somewhere. But to have the opportunity, and with Donegal Airport now, people can fly directly to Donegal Airport via Dublin, of course. You know, there are ways into, now we want people from going into Ireland West to go north, not necessarily south, right? And to avail of the services at Donegal Airport. But there are ways to get straight into the West now as well too.
And we're working really strongly with the Causeway Coastal Route this year in terms of shared islands money that we received, $7.6 million, in terms of that connectivity between the Causeway Coast and the Wild Atlantic Way. Because when an overseas visitor looks at a map, they're not looking in that division. They're just looking at one coastal route. So Belfast and Derry are also key access points for us for the Northwest.
Yeah, and of course, you know, you can do your bit, but we also need businesses to be able to continue to operate. And, you know, the small pubs, the small restaurants and what have you, we need them there as well. The scenery is beautiful, but we need the service providers there. We also need accommodation as well, you know. Yeah. So these are challenges at the moment. Much of the accommodation is being used for other purposes, particularly here in Donegal. When you're trying to get people to go north, they could say to you, yeah, lovely if I could book somewhere. Do you know what I mean? So we have to get that sorted too, don't we?
We really understand that challenge in Fáilte, Ireland. Like 12% of our registered accommodation nationally has gone over to supporting the Ukrainian crisis. 15% of that accommodation in Donegal has gone over. We're not as bad as some counties where they have 20 and 30, but we do understand that challenge. And like that, the activities and attractions that are in those areas, that large volumes of accommodation has gone from, we have launched a business support grant today to help those businesses that are receiving a downturn in their revenue because of that. And it is a challenge. We understand cost of doing business at the moment is a real challenge, not only for tourism businesses, for businesses in general.
Of course. And I think if we were able to dig into those figures a little deeper in terms of where those beds are, beds availability on the Wild Atlantic Way, maybe you've already, do we have those figures?
We do, and we keep a very close eye on everything.
What's
that
the percentage? Do you know what the percentage
is? For us in Donegal, I suppose that's always the one, Greg, that I'm watching very closely. We're up at 15% of our registered accommodation has gone over.
Okay.
But we're actually doing an accommodation workshop tonight, or tomorrow night in Fannet in the community centre, and it's all about getting people who maybe are looking at the idea of making accommodation available for B&B, self-catering or welcome standard.
All right, Fáilte Ireland hosting a free information evening for all tourism accommodation providers or prospective accommodation providers across Donegal tomorrow night, as you just heard. It's in the Fannet Community Centre between 6 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. Accommodation, tourism accommodation, vital, hugely important, of course. Stick your headphones on there, John, if you don't mind.
Sure.
We have Kevin Duher, who is the Wild Atlantic Traveller. Kevin, how are you getting on?
Greg.
It's not a bad way to make your name, is it? Tour in the Wild Atlantic Way.
Definitely not. Somebody might as well join it, but nice to see you anyway. Hi, Joan, how are you?
Hi, Kevin.
It's good to have you with us. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about Donegal first and foremost, aren't we? I mean, I defy anyone listening. I don't defy them. I doubt anyone listening has taken everything in that this county has to offer on the Wild Atlantic Way alone, because, you know, we talk about international and national tourism. You know, it's only relatively recently, I myself have, you know, started properly exploring, I think, the hidden and not so hidden gems that we have, Kevin.
Yeah, well, look, there's so much, you know, even myself, like I'm still finding different gems now and again. But like Donegal's so big, and it's amazing how many people just come for a day trip and expect to see the whole entire county. Do you know, like a week's never enough. But I do agree with you. We do have the best county, you know, in terms of scenery, people, hospitality, the friendly welcome. We do have everything up here.
Yeah.
The only thing we don't have is the weather. But we don't, you don't come to Ireland for the weather.
Not at all. You know, it doesn't matter. If you're out kayaking, it doesn't matter if it's raining or not. Also, to Inishowen, and there was a bit of a campaign at the time, I remember, to have Inishowen included. I would say it's probably less travelled, but not less deserving, because Inishowen has so much to offer. Just in, you talk about exploring, you know, Donegal, you could actually spend a full holiday just exploring Inishowen.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Do you know, people forget, you know, about Inishowen. They come straight here to Glenveagh, Fanad Lighthouse, Slieve League, but they skip sometimes Inishowen and go up to the Five Finger Strand, you know, the Urus Hills to go hiking. You've Strove Lighthouse too as well, which is a beautiful spot. And they've just got a sauna, a wood-fired sauna up there too as well. So if you like sea swimming, it's fantastic and a beautiful place. And we've got some great hotels up there too.
Just to come in there, we'll have a 12 million euro investment there in Fort Dunree. So we want to create that iconic attraction within Inishowen that will support those smaller attractions that are there, so that when someone looks at a map, they're thinking there's enough to do in that area for 3 to 5 days.
For sure. We don't need people getting off a liner or whatever you call those cruise ships and being bussed out of Inishowen. We need a product there that's very consumable.
And that's definitely what we're focusing on now over the next couple of years.
Further south, you haven't got down as far as Cork yet. You've gone as far as Kerry. You know, like, it's very... obviously it's best here, and it's very hard not to be super proud of Donegal and Procol, all right? But give us a sense of the Wild Atlantic Way as you meander down the west coast. Kevin, is it nice?
It's okay. to be fair, there's some great spots. Like, you know, I've got a few favourites myself, you know, when I kind of go down that way and I go back to a few of the same spots. Do you know, like Keane Bay, as people pronounce it, but the locals pronounce it Kim. Such a beautiful place. And April and May is a good time to see the Basking Sharks. I've been onto the Iron Islands, Inishmore, beautiful island to get onto, to go see the Wormhole, the Black Fort. And again, it's a lovely island to stay on, and I always recommend people staying on it. Clare, Loophead Lighthouse, beautiful. You've got the ferry bridge down there as well. Cliffs of Moher. Everybody seems to do it by land, but forget to do it by sea. And I think this is so important too for Donegal, for Slieve League. See it by boat.
I think there's a whole different dynamic. I think there might be a new service out there. I meant to mention
Atlantic Coastal Cruises has just launched,
haven't they? Yeah.
And Paddy Burnhill now has 3 boats in the water over there. Paddy, you know,
I know Kevin's all about the collabs, but Paddy, you know, I can go on that boat. I've got a camera too. I can waffle.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
I think I'll change jobs with Kevin, actually.
I know. But Kevin, you've mixed it up a bit. You've heretofore, you kind of do hotels, Airbnbs, camper vans. This season, you're looking to do a bit of wild camping.
Yeah, a bit of wild camping, get back to nature and stuff.
In a tent.
That we kind of ground
in
ourselves.
In a tent,
get out,
Kevin.
There.
Are you going to do it in a tent?
Yeah.
No. Wild camping is you have to forge your own food. You have to build your own... you know, like Naked and Afraid. You know,
as long as there's McDonald's, I'll be fine.
Exactly. I think that's the flavour of wild camping we're going to see from Kevin. But no, I get you. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, say, for instance, you drive over Loch Salt or whatever, and you can see some people have stumbled across that parking space there, and they've either got the back of the camper van open or they've got a tent, and you go, wow. What must that feel like? Now, you could do it, but there's a bed not far away, right?
Yeah.
But you look at it and go, wow, now that is, you're talking banking experiences there. That's, you want a bit of that action, Kevin.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've seen more people converting vans into camper vans. Do you know, this last year and this year too as well, a lot of my friends have converted vans to wake up at these different locations. But I always say be mindful too when you go to these locations, because you don't want to leave kind of, I always like leave no trace.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Just footprints. And that's kind of like a slogan that I've carried throughout. And it's always like, you know, a lot of places now don't allow camper vans to park up. So I always kind of say, you know, kind of look for them. There is guides
I mean, the council have taken that on board, and there's a public consultation about how we can promote that type of holidaying, but respect the locals. Mm-hmm. Joan, you wanted to come in there a sec.
And probably, Kevin, you're well able to do the coffee guide for the Wild Atlantic Way at this stage with all the excellent coffee stops we have now at some of the discovery points along the route. Like I was down at Mount Charles Pier last Sunday, and just the buzz around the pier and the amount of people that were out.
Well, if you don't call it Mount Charles, you'll not be welcome back.
Mount Charles, yeah.
It'll be your last visit, yeah, Joan.
But the amount of people that were out wild swimming and were having their coffee and
brilliant,
it's just,
macro fishing spot, yeah, actually, as well.
You know, the discovery points is
and just a wee bit up from there, there's a beautiful. Oh my God, I spent so much of my childhood there as well. Durin Rock, it's just up a little bit north of that. It's beautiful. Right, you go snorkeling. We don't do enough snorkeling here. Snorkeling is fantastic.
No, but water sports have definitely taken off. The kayaking, you know, all of that. The activity providers, they've all grown their business nearly along the West Coast.
Fantastic stuff.
Now.
We did a kayaking tour last, not a tour, but we went out with the guy, and it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right, okay, Kevin. So you're going to keep logging your adventures for our pleasure on your social medias, the Wild Atlantic Traveller. Look forward to seeing some of this wild camping. So no hotels, no nothing, right?
I hope you still join too.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. You give me a converted one. Yeah, all right, no problem. No problem at all. All right, take care, Kevin. Thank you so much. Very much indeed. And keep up the great work. Thanks so very much indeed, Kevin Duher, Wild Atlantic Traveller. And a lot of people now get their suggestions and their advice from, you know, seeing other people doing it as well. It's really valuable. Right. Okay, Joan. 10 years and it's onwards and upwards as well too.
Onwards and upwards. It's really important for us now to focus on working with businesses along the Wild Atlantic Way in terms of the supports, like, you know, building resilience around their commercial and financial business models. Also to look at the investment in terms of, you know, the Wild Atlantic Way, the capital investment. Mm-hmm. We're not finished over at Sleeve League. We'd like to get Malnhead over the line. We've Fort Dunray coming on stream. So, yeah, we'll continue to work in terms of that capital investment. And we have this year as well. Now we're going back out to relook at all of the signage and the maintenance again for the discovery points, because it's really important what we're putting in the shop window is what people are getting when they arrive. So the unique landscape is really important in terms of that environmental piece for us as well, in terms of that environmental monitoring for the Wild Atlantic Way.
All right, brilliant stuff, John. It's been lovely having
Thanks,
you on.
Great.
And it's been interesting to market, of course, as well. And we all have, hopefully, a chance this spring into summer to explore more of our county, more of the Wild Atlantic Way. Okay, Joan, thank you very much indeed.
Great.
That's Joan Crawford, who's manager of Wild Atlantic Way at Fulcher Ireland. Any of your favourite visiting spots, let us know. 086 60 25,000. Professor Francis Finucane is consultant endocrinologist at Galway University Hospital. He's taken a short time out of his very busy day to speak to us. Good morning to you, Professor. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me on.
More than 1 billion people in the world are now living with obesity. Ireland has one of the highest rates. 1 in 4 here are obese. Are we changing, slowly but surely, changing our attitudes to recognise that this isn't all just sort of lifestyle choice or whatever it might be, and that for some, you know, for most or for some or for all, that this is actually a disease and need to be treated by, you know, the HSE and the government as such?
Yeah, I think so. Like any public health problem, really a two-pronged approach needs to be taken. And that's what we teach, you know, students of obesity at the University of Galway. You know, anybody who works in public health will know that on the one hand, you have to provide treatment to people who are worst affected by a condition like overweight and obesity. And on the other hand, you've got to take population-level approaches so that the overall number of affected individuals at any point in time decreases.
Now, what we are seeing, which is particularly concerning, and this means we really need to start acting now or continue to in the efforts, is that there's been a quadrupling of obesity among children and adolescents aged 5 to 19, which is a critical period of development. And presumably, you know, if you are carrying too much weight, that can harm that process.
Well, that's right. We know for sure now that childhood overweight and obesity isn't necessarily benign. It's not a matter of so-called puppy fat. And several studies have confirmed that children who are overweight, who have a persistent overweight into adulthood, do have a higher risk of things like cardiovascular disease, for example. So it's a real concern that our young people are exposed to this risk. I think what's changing, Greg, is that the solution is not to encourage young children to be more responsible or to lay the blame on them or their parents. Rather, society needs to take responsibility here. We need to make the food environment, in particular, much healthier for younger people and expose them to much less unhealthy junk food.
And the complexity of the problem is that often we see the worst diets in families with least resources, and we have a serious growing problem of poverty and children in poverty, and it's all interlinked. So it's not just a health issue then, it's a broader societal issue as well.
Absolutely. Obesity is not just a health issue, although that's ultimately how it affects the worst affected individuals, of course. It's probably the most pertinent part of the problem for severely affected individuals. But it's a societal, political, legislative, moral and ethical problem. And we have to grapple with this. It's also a challenge for commercial actors. And so we need to recognise that if we're going to tackle the obesity crisis, it's going to hurt, say, the producers of ultra-processed foods. And we do have to acknowledge that those potential hazards exist. And that, there's going to be an effect on the commercial bottom line for food producers. But I think that obesity experts and public health advocates would argue that that's a difficult decision we're going to have to make, and that we're going to have to take the profits out of some of these particularly unhealthy foods. And we're going to have to be careful about how truthful advertising, say, of certain breakfast cereals are for young people, etc.
Yeah, of course. And we did have the sugar tax, and that sugar tax was to be refenced for education and measures in this area. If we're talking of quadrupling of obesity in young people, we're not seeing the fruits of that. And I think really that needs to be explained to us what's being done with that money.
Yeah, so for example, the plastic bag tax that was introduced about 20 years ago was hypothecated or ring-fenced for environmental initiatives like bottle banks, etc. And that was a virtuous sort of a circle of improvements that then led to further environment. So there was a reduction in plastic bag consumption, very dramatic, something like 97% reduction immediately that was introduced. And then there was the funding of these resources that led to further improvements in the environment. That has not happened, unfortunately, with the sugar tax. And I think that Leo Varadkar and some politicians were in favour of ring fencing, but others at the time were not. Yeah. We would, of course, love to see that money ring fenced, and not just for preventive measures, but also for investment in treatment of obesity. And in particular, I think bariatric surgery and obesity surgery is something that's particularly effective, particularly cost effective, especially in people with pre-diabetes and others. And we've got to do more to enhance access and use the expertise we have now in Ireland, the multidisciplinary expertise with nurses, dietitians, physiotherapists, exercise specialists, psychologists, surgeons and physicians. We can harness that expertise to deliver this care now. We need to ramp up that activity significantly, I believe, over the coming months.
Professor Francis Finucane, thank you very much. I do appreciate your time today. He's a consultant endocrinologist at Galway University Hospital. Have a wonderful Monday, everyone. And all being well, we'll see you tomorrow morning at 9.